Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.
Midnight has passed, and in the stillness of these hours, the hauntings are never silent. This is Real Ghost Stories Online, after midnight.
Some hauntings follow families the way storms follow valleys, settling into the corners of homes and lives as though they've been waiting there all along. For the Long family, it began in the 1950s, and what unfolded over the next 4 years would leave an imprint so deep that decades later they would still remember every sound, every movement, every face pressed against the window glass. But even before Inglewood, before California, before the houses that would become infamous in their family story, there was the first sign. 1951, Renton, Washington, Christmas time. A boy, only 4 years old, woke in the middle of the night, needing the bathroom. The house was quiet, heavy with sleep, the hall dark, but for the orange flicker of fire from a pot-bellied stove in the living room. He stepped out into the hall, moving toward the bathroom, when something bright flickered in the corner of his eye. He turned toward the stove, and that's when he saw it. A being made of fire shot out of the stove 3 to 4 feet tall, its body flames, its eyes burning red. It danced across the living room in front of him, a grotesque parody of life born out of the stove's embers. Terrified, he wet himself, bolted for his parents' bedroom, and dove under the covers. His father rolled over and went back to sleep, but his mother found him crying, shaking, too afraid to walk back down the hall. She changed him in her room while he hid beneath the blankets, the memory already searing itself into him. He never saw anything quite like that again. Not even the ghost that came later. But the fire demon was the beginning. By 1956, the family had moved to Inglewood, California. Their new house sat at 10,130 Condon Avenue, a Spanish-style home built in the 1920s, worn by time but big enough for the growing family. 4 children shared a single bedroom, Don, 9 years old, his sister Bonnie, 8, and his younger brothers Robert and Kenneth, 6 and 4. 2 surplus army bunk beds sat across from one another, one against each wall. And that's where the haunting began. It started as scratching, fingernails against wood from beneath Don's bed. He froze, listening, as the sound moved, crawling across the room to his siblings' beds, then back again, always shifting, always taunting. His younger brothers cried, frightened, while he and his sister tried to make sense of it. Sometimes the scratches came with knocks, sharp raps against the floor or the walls. Not every night, but enough nights to wear on them, to make bedtime less a ritual and more a sentence. By 1957, the scratching was joined by something worse, the footsteps. The house had old hardwood floors, bare except for a few area rugs. Late at night, after everyone had gone to bed, the family would hear them. Soft, dragging footsteps as though someone frail were shuffling across the boards. Swish, swish, swish. Moving from the dining room down the hall through the house, they never lifted their feet, just shuffled. And one night, those steps came straight into the children's bedroom. The door, closed but not locked, creaked open on its own. The footsteps shuffled closer into the room. Don stared into the dark, his eyes tracing the hall. He could see all the way to his parents' closed door, but no one stood between. Still, the sound came closer and closer until it reached the foot of his bed. Their cat, Snowball, curled at his feet, suddenly sprang up, arched her back, hissed into the empty air. A loud clang struck the foot of the bed frame, vibrating through the wood. The boys screamed, his sister shouted for their parents, and Don dove under the covers as the room exploded with fear. His parents came running. Their mother admitted she had heard the footsteps, too. She told them what they already knew, the house was haunted. If footsteps slipping into your room at night weren't enough, the house soon found new ways to remind the Long children they weren't alone. One night, the shuffle returned. It moved from the dining room through the hall and right up to their bedroom door. But this time, instead of pushing in, the sound veered. The hall closet door creaked open on its own. Inside, high on a shelf, sat a basketball their father had tossed up there weeks earlier. The ball dropped to the floor, and then it bounced. Not once, not twice, but over and over, as though an invisible hand were dribbling it against the hardwood, up and down, steady, purposeful. The thump echoed through the narrow hall until the children's screams tore through the night. Their father flung his bedroom door wide, stormed down the hall, and in one swift motion grabbed the ball out of the air. When he snapped on the lights, the bouncing stopped. The hallway was empty, but the damage was done. The house had shown them it could move things, it could make noise, it could play. And then it showed them its face. April 1958. Afternoon. Don and his brother Bob were chasing each other in the yard, weaving around the garage and the lean-to shed out back. The shed had always been locked tight, its single window curtained in lace, its interior filled with the kind of shadows children don't like to linger near. As the boys rounded the dog run, they stopped. Someone was inside. Through the lace curtain, they saw her. A tall, thin old woman with gaunt features, her face wrinkled and severe. She wore a white lace wedding dress, the fabric shabby but unmistakable. And she was staring at them, cold, stern. They froze, their play forgotten. Then terror took over. Screaming, they bolted, hearts hammering, certain they had seen a ghost. Later, the truth emerged. The shed was unlocked by a relative of the family who had owned the house before them, the Dillons. Inside on the shelf sat a steamer trunk. When he opened it, he showed the children what lay folded inside. A white lace wedding dress. It had belonged to Mrs. Dillon, who had died in the back bedroom of the house in 1955, just a year before the Longs moved in. And when the man produced a photograph of her, the boys' stomachs dropped. It was her. The face they had seen peering out at them from behind the curtain. The haunting escalated after that. Objects moved constantly, often in plain sight. Cups and glasses slid across tables. Silverware rattled. Salt and pepper shakers danced between the dining table and the mirrored sideboard. Once, items their mother had left on the dining room table were later found neatly arranged back in the kitchen, as though someone had put them away. Another time, a glass of water tipped over on its own while she peeled potatoes. And sometimes, the activity turned violent. Don remembers sitting at the table when an ink pen lifted, shot past his face and embedded itself in the wall behind him. Inches closer, and it would have struck his head. The family tried to carry on. They had neighbors close by, planes flying overhead on the approach to LAX, all the normal noise of suburban Los Angeles life. But none of that explained the scratching, the footsteps, the moving objects, the apparition in the shed. None of it explained why the house seemed determined to make itself known and to terrify the children who lived inside it. By 1959, the family moved again, this time just a short distance away to another old house in Inglewood's Lenox District. If they hoped the activity would stop with a change of address, they were wrong. The new place had charm, knotty pine walls, a sprawling kitchen and pantry, more space than the cramped Condon Avenue home. But beauty doesn't erase history, and this house had a history of its own. At first, the events were small. Don would wake in the night to find his blankets pulled clean off, the cold air biting at him while the room stayed empty. Other times, the air seemed to stir with a presence he couldn't see, leaving him wide awake, heart pounding, afraid to close his eyes again. But his sister bore the worst of it. Night after night, something pressed down on her, heavy, suffocating. It smelled foul, and its breath came ragged, as though whatever it was struggled to breathe as it pinned her into the mattress. She would thrash, scream, until suddenly the weight lifted, leaving her gasping and terrified. She told them it felt like it was trying to choke her to death, As if that weren't enough, the house birthed a new horror. Walnuts. A great black walnut tree stretched its branches over the back of the house. The family was used to hearing them fall onto the roof at night, but soon the nuts began showing up, where they didn't belong, inside the house, in his sister's bedroom. Sometimes in neat piles on the floor, sometimes rolling down from the ceiling, as if dropped by an invisible hand. Other times they would land directly on her bed while she slept, waking her in terror. There was no hole in the ceiling, no squirrels, no broken shells, just whole intact walnuts appearing out of nowhere again and again. The poltergeist phenomena continued, objects moving, covers tugged, unseen forces pressing down on sleepers. And then came the faces. After a fire burned down their garage in late 1959, the activity reached its peak. At night, ghostly faces began to appear at the windows of the house, glaring in from the darkness. Grotesque, bizarre expressions pressed against the glass, vanishing when someone ran to check. The children were too frightened to sleep near the windows. The family knew the haunting wasn't tied to one address. It was following them. By the end of 1960, the Longs had had enough. They left Inglewood behind for a home in Norwalk, and just like that, the activity stopped. For Don Long, the 1950s were not just years of childhood, but years of haunting. From the fire demon in a Washington stove, to the scratching and footsteps in Inglewood, to the face of an old woman in a wedding dress staring out from a locked shed, to walnuts raining from nowhere, it all stacked into something that would shape the way he saw the world for the rest of his life. The family never caught it on camera. They never had photographs, recordings, or proof beyond what they lived through together. But that was enough, because every member of the Long family, Don, his sister Bonnie, his brothers Robert and Kenneth, and even their mother Lila, experienced it firsthand. There were too many nights when the children screamed in unison. Too many times their cat hissed at nothing. Too many objects that moved without hands. Too many times their father had to run down the hall and throw on the lights, only to find his family shaking in their beds and nothing in the air but fear. Years later, Don would return to those houses. By then, both would be torn down, one to make way for a storage lot, the other replaced by a new build. But when he visited the first in the 1970s, long before demolition, he found that the people living there still whispered of the same phenomena. Candles lighting and snuffing themselves, objects shifting when no one was watching. The ghost had outlived the Long's tenancy. Don grew up with a certainty most people never find, that there is a world layered over ours, invisible most of the time, but no less real. A spirit world that breathes against the same walls we live in. A world that sometimes whispers, sometimes scratches, sometimes suffocates. For him, it wasn't an abstract belief. It was memory. It was lived experience. And in the end, that haunting shaped his faith. When the time came, it was no leap for Don to become a born-again Christian. He had already seen enough to believe in unseen things. Enough to know that there are forces, whether ghosts of the dead or darker spirits entirely, that walk in our world. The Long family left Inglewood in 1960. The walnuts stopped, the smothering ended. The faces at the windows no longer appeared, but the memory of those years never left them. Even now, when Don tells the story, he doesn't claim to know exactly what they lived through. Was it the restless ghost of Mrs. Dillon bound to the house where she died? Was it evil spirits masquerading in familiar forms? Or was it something else entirely? Something that defies even the categories of folklore? He can't answer that. None of them can. What he does know is this. Sometimes a haunting doesn't just touch one person. Sometimes it moves through a whole family, searing itself into their childhoods, leaving them changed forever. And if you'd asked Don Long in 1958 what haunted his house, he wouldn't have tried to explain. He would have just pointed down the hall to the place where the footsteps always began and told you to listen. Because sometimes the dead don't whisper. They shuffle.
Want more real ghost stories? Then press subscribe now so you don't miss any of the multiple new ghost stories we drop for you every day. Only here at Real Ghost Stories Online.
Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.